hold on. Before you start waving around that freedom of speech thing, and you're in a crowded movie theater and you scream fire, you better be able to smell smoke. You come on this radio show and you start saying incandescent things like that, you better have more behind you, pal, than just your thumb. I've been listening to talk radio for years, and one thing I just can't stand is when the host has to, like, push his way on the people, beat the callers into his way of thinking, extending his ego, or when the callers call in and say something so outrageous and the host lets it go unchallenged. The sign you're on the road to truth is the lack of contradiction. You want to find truth, you just don't simply believe somebody because of their authority or their degree, or you listen to what they say, you test it against reality, and you hold their feet to the fire.
Feet to the fire.
Michael Tesarion, born in Ireland. Michael Tesarion is an expert in the occult histories of Ireland and America. He has made the deepest researches into Atlantis, the origins of evil, into the Irish origins of civilization. Michael is an author of the acclaimed book Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, and the producer and presenter of Origins and Oracles, a series exploring ancient mysteries and forbidden knowledge. In the tradition of some like Emmanuel Valesky, William Bramley, Ignatius Donnelly, etc., Michael's book considers the consequences of extraterrestrial involvement and clarifies much of the disinformation concerning Atlantis, Lemuria, and the pre-Diluvian period. Well, I'm going to really enjoy that. Michael addresses the orchestrated chaos of modern times. Oh, another great one. And reveals the true origins of the present political machines which are bringing into the world we live into ruins. Oh, yes. As well as stating the problems, Michael furnishes us with solutions. Hear, hear, solutions, not just a one to say the sky is falling, to the moral and social predicaments that have beset mankind over millennia. I'd like to welcome Michael.
James, hello, hi. Nice to be on your show.
Oh, I'm just really happy to have you here. I was poking through your website. Besides being incredibly beautiful to look at, which I like that. I like a real nice, pleasing visual display, not just that newspaper type of PHP stuff that I see everywhere. It's very pleasing and full of so much goodies. That's just great. I'm glad you're here.
Well, your site looks fantastic as well, and that's very important. I mean, the internet is, after all, mostly graphics, and that's what people are coming to look for. And you know, it's also interesting to have the information, but also to present it in a pleasing way. I mean, it's like window shopping. You know, the internet is pretty much the virtual city, the virtual town. And when people come to your shop, you know, to look in, it's good to have a good display. You know, so that people, you know, feel good about that, and maybe pass on the message about that. You know, and feel inspired to create their own, you know, art. Because the beauty of the internet is it's not just an information oracle, it's also a canvas on which you can paint. It's sort of, you know, brings the right brain and the left brain together, you know.
Excellent. It's like, you know, if you were going to read in a warehouse, or if you were going into a pleasant room with, you know, candles and some incense, or, you know, it sets the mood, sets the tone.
It sets the tone, exactly. It's very, and I, you know, I get a lot of compliments for that, but, you know, again, it's because I've checked out other sites and like the way they're designed, and I always admire that, you know.
We'll open the phones in the next hour, because I've had probably of all the guests I've had requests for, I've had most for you, and I've seen them, and when I actually counted them up, I said, whoa, I've been getting behind the times here. So we're going to have a lot of people have questions. A couple of things I like to go on, and anything you want to bring up, just hop in there. But you have, in your little bio here, you've said a couple of things that really touched with me. Disinformation concerning Atlantis and Lemuria and the pre Diluvian period. I hear so many different stories of how Lemuria came and went, Atlantis. In fact, one guy that I read, this channeling individual, is how he was an Atlantean Lemurian warrior fighting off Atlantis. And while another one I hear read about, there were completely unrelated. A Lemurian was destroyed by an earth change, scattered around, and it took, you know, hundreds, thousands of whatever years to build back up to Atlantis.
Mm-hmm. When you're reading different people's, you know, ideas, a lot of them are right. It's not that anybody's wrong. A lot of them are right, but they have pieces of the puzzle. It's, you know, pieces of a puzzle can be in your hand, obviously, when you buy a jigsaw. The key thing, though, for our particular new century is to get the overall picture on the box. I think this has been lacking. You know, everyone from as great as your own Ignatius Donnelly in this country and obviously clairvoyance of the highest magnitude, like Edgar Cayce, and then individuals like you've just mentioned who are, you know, mavericks who are talking about their experiences, individuals who maybe don't have, you know, public status, but they are definitely piped in and tuned in to the subject of Atlantis. You know, they've suffered ridicule from their parents and from the people around them who think they're, you know, out of, you know, completely mad or whatever. But they have had visions, they've had dreams, they feel very strongly connected. You have people in the New Age movement talking about that even the west coast of America is a new Atlantis. So, that, you know, it's not that anybody's wrong, it's that a lot of people are right. But it's like you're all holding different parts of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. Each piece is essential, even the most way out stuff. And my work mostly focuses on two things, bringing together those pieces, but also sort of sifting through the disinformation, because we don't just have good people and historically, you know, informed people talking about these great subjects. We also have a massive campaign of disinformation, which has gone on for many hundreds of years, about these subjects as well. So one has to be sort of in the vanguard of the people who know how to, you know, see that disinformation for what it is. Because, again, if you don't do that, then the media and the television and a lot of these disinformationalist books will be putting out stories that are not correct and not true and leading people away from the actual truth. And I kind of found that happening. I kind of found that, okay, we got a New Age movement and this subject again back in fashion. That's fantastic. But wait a minute, how come some of these great, great themes that are in the ancient legends of old are not coming to light? How come so many more books are being written now since 1980 on the subject of Atlantis, and yet there's glaring, absolutely glaring holes which the ancient legends were, you know, had filled and were talking about? So what's going on? So my work was mostly prompted by that, by these X factors. It was more like, okay, I acknowledge everybody's got these pieces of the information, but why are these other key pieces of information, like about genetics and about the Eves, Adam and Eve, and the Book of Genesis, you see, and the true identity of the serpent, for instance, you know, and so many of the War of the Gods, you name it. Why are so many of these subjects not being treated correctly? So my work was to try and bring the pieces together, but also to really be able to analyze what it was that was disinformation, so that people would be spared the 25 years of research that I and others have done, because they don't have that time. People are working hard, they don't have that time. And it's our job, is it not, to synthesize that so other people can pick up a book and read it quickly without having to do all that intense research, you know?
Amen and amen. I mean, that's what you're doing, is putting the pieces together. And that is incredibly important, because somebody who may be studying in one vein for 30 years and they've uncovered every single nook and cranny, things that are relative and not relative, but they can't tell because they're so close and so focused, it has to be looked at by someone outside.
That's right. And remember, there are prejudices. And more importantly than that, there is an engine of disinformation out there. Not all books are written by people who are telling the truth. Not all TV programs about Atlantis and the ancient times are telling you the truth. There's just lots and lots of disinformation out there.
Well, go ahead.
No.
Oh, that seems like a great place to dive in. Well, how do you tell? I mean, do you have a little formula you could share, or is it too elaborate? How do you weed out disinformation?
Well, that's actually easier than people might think. I trust the ancient legends and the ancient mythologies of the world, period. It's very much like what Joseph Campbell and even Carl Jung and, you know, Mircea Eliade and others were talking about. And then that kind of interest after Joseph Campbell, if you really, I mean, I'm sure you'll agree with me that the interest in the ancient legends and myths has basically lapsed. Yes, there's been a few books out there after that period when Joseph Campbell brought these, you know, great subjects to light. And maybe, as you know, some movies still draw upon it. But in the public eye in general, the real interesting focus, the real return, let's say, to the absolute discovery of what the archive of knowledge of our ancestors was has not really caught on. In my life, coming from Ireland, coming out of Belfast, you know, it was clear to me that these ancient legends should be treated with as much reverence and should be considered as factual as anything that even science would throw in front of us, and certainly should be considered more factual than the disinformationalists and the pundits and the modern media put in front of us. So if we're going to compare ancient legends and ancient myths, which, believe me, I know they sound like folk tales, a lot of it's very magical and mysterious, but in my mind, there's been no argument about it at all. If we have to choose whether these ancient myths coming from Greece and Rome and Ireland, you see, and the American Indians, are to be trusted more than the garbage media that is put in front of us, to me, there's no argument. So when you use the backdrop of these kinds of legends and mythologies, and granted, you need to be able to have to read them in a right brain kind of way, but once you accept that what these legends are not just fabulous stories made up by old fishwives, that these are the archive of knowledge from the ancient times, then it becomes quite easy to see when modern people are writing a bunch of hoopla and a bunch of, you know, malarkey that doesn't make sense. And you can spot the holes. And you can, and also then when you've read some of the more modern, you know, geniuses like your Ignatius Donnelly and Charles Berlitz and people who are experts in this field like Emmanuel Velikovsky and others, you have a huge amount of base to know that when modern 20th century and 21st century books are coming out, where they're just, you know, talking nonsense, and also where they are maybe correct. So again, the main thing is that you can't do it unless you have an archive of knowledge on which you're relying, that you're turning to, in order to really know the truth, and then you're able to critique whatever is put in front of you and going, oh, that doesn't quite sound too right there. You know, that doesn't cross-reference with a lot of what the other mythologies are saying. It sounds good on TV, but this piece of information that this person is giving, like, for instance, saying Atlantis was in the Mediterranean, for one example, right? Yeah, that sounds lovely, and yeah, there are a lot of ancient ruins that have been discovered under the ocean, under the sea in the Mediterranean, but that does not necessarily mean that that's Atlantis. Why is this person jumping the gun and saying that suddenly, because they found a bunch of columns and some, you know, ruins under the Mediterranean, that suddenly it's Atlantis? And then you start to find that this person is not the only one doing that. That everywhere some wannabe Indiana Jones turns up a rock in the Syrian desert or in Bolivia or wherever, they suddenly claim that they've discovered Atlantis. Each of them are contradicting one another because, my God, there can only be one Atlantis. You know, and then you realize, well, it's publicity. They want to get their name out. And sure, they've done a wonderful work archaeologically to discover some ruins. But wait a minute. Atlantis is a bona fide, absolutely historic, mythological, historical, factual thing that existed in pre-Diluvian times. And you can't just say that your particular relic out in some desert is it. Why are they doing this? This used to jar me because all the legends talk about it. That Atlantis was in the north where the Atlantic Ocean is now. That's is every single legend of the ancient world says that. But then along comes these individuals, find some ruins, and then say, it's Atlantis, flying in the face of what the ancient legends are saying. And I can't say that's unbelievable. What you have probably discovered is a outpost of the Empire of Atlantis. And let's say in the same way that London, which was once upon a time, remember England, the British Empire, they stretched their tentacles to all parts of the world. But you wouldn't go to Delhi and say, look, here's British buildings in Delhi. It must be London.
Oh, right? That's a very good point.
Right. And if you find ruins of the British colonies out in some other, you know, place, you're not going to say, hey, fantastic, I found England, I found London. No, this is a tentacle of the great empire of England that, not so great if you want my actual opinion, but let's leave that aside. The great empire of London, of England, right? So it's the same thing with Atlantis. Wonderful, they've done great work, they've discovered some ancient ruins, but let's keep things in perspective. Atlantis was an enormous political power center, which had its bastions and its lieutenants, you see, in several parts of the world, and this is what these individuals are discovering. So that's just one small area, you know, that, you know, I would find, going by the legends, would be sort of disinformation.
Now, well, while I'm listening to you talk, is the formula you're using gives validation to what I've been saying as well, is I got a problem with single point references for truth.
Right.
Truth is so big and awesome and multidimensional that it sticks its little points up all over the place. And
Yeah. You're
going to see it here, there, and everywhere. And if somebody has a corner on the truth, they have the only single reason that contradicts everyone else, but they're right. Well, that's actually a very big sign for being wrong.
Well, you know what it is? It's almost like it's not even the rational faculty that tells the truth. that knows that you're reading the truth. It's some intuitive, inner, instinctual thing, which is why I get so many compliments for my work. Is because, yes, I'm convinced rationally that I'm talking sense, but hell, I didn't know the first person who read the book would think it was total junk. You know, I had no preconceived ideas. In fact, the book wasn't even my own idea to write. So I had no idea that when people like Richard Hoagland, you see, and lots of other academics in the field, Dr. Lear, and then all the people that, you know, have bought the book so far, I had no idea what their reactions were going to be. But there's something inside that's very deep and very ancestral that just sort of goes, yeah, this has the ring of truth. And it seems that my work has this, because I'm convinced that it's rationally true. But other people are going, you know, this makes sense. What he's talking about makes absolute sense on a deep level. I believe this to be true. And this is where, you know, I think that the recognition towards me has come from, because, as I say, the book was not my idea at all. I've been studying the thing as what one might want to call a hobby. I think it was always more than a hobby, but it was never something that I ever conceived of doing publicly. And it was only when Victoria Jack of the UFO expos in the Bay Area, California, and Brian Hall and Charlotte Lefevre of the, you know, UFO MUFON movement in Washington, these kinds of alumni in the MUFON movement and in the UFO movement of America, they were the ones saying, Michael, your ideas, you've got to write them down. Will you please write them down, even if it's just some notes? You know, and Victoria Jack actually said to me that she had invited me to come and talk, you know, for 2 hours at her conference in the Bay Area on paranormal subjects, but told me on the phone that if I came in the door without something printed, like just even notes, you know, spiral bound or Kinko's or whatever, that she's going to send me home. That you're not going to get on that plot, because she's told me so many times, and you are going to come, and you must bring, this is, I'm not absolutely joking you, I can even give you the dates when she told me this, that you must come with some notes. I don't care if you've handwritten them, I don't care if you've gone to Kinko's and stapled them together, people will buy it, and people need this knowledge, you've got to put it down. And that document, which of course I then did, it was, you know, maybe a 100-page document or whatever, spiral bound, and this document then, through people's support, finally became the Atlantis book, you know, which is now available. But it's just amazing how that was. There was no preconceived idea at all. I deal more with astrology and tarot and mystery school subject matter, and had studied this, and never in my mind had formed an idea.
Well, another good trait, what I've done in my years is I've learned little, like, truths. Like, I guess in math, they call them like axioms or givens and proofs. And one of the things also is someone who has truth and is a honest leader is more or less drafted to lead. The one who wants to is the one you got to worry about.
Yeah.
And in this case, you were more or less drafted to start writing this book.
No question about it. I mean, everything that I've done publicly, you can mostly say, especially in the paranormal field, has not been auto-generated. It has been purely by being dragged to these places, you know, by supporters. Brian Hall believed in my, you know, subversive symbolism concept, which I've worked on for years, about how the youth of the world are being absolutely bombarded with the psychic poison, which is advertising in our midst on billboards and on the television. And, you know, and I've worked on that in great detail, put a lot of stuff together on that, you know, but I couldn't find anyone who would give me the time to, you know, at these conferences, because they tend to focus a lot on just the UFOs and paranormal and all of that, and they weren't so grassroots as I am. You know, I'm very grassroots. I go, okay, this is a very interesting subject, but wait a minute, our kids are dying in the streets. Our kids are walking around like zombies, you know, wearing these logos and these t-shirts, and they don't even know what they mean, and they're being influenced by Madison Avenue. So I have this whole other study that I've been doing since I was 13 years of age. You know, and I came to Brian humbly, and I said, you know, I know you want me to talk at your conference, but, you know, actually, rather than do something on the Illuminati as usual, because you have some other fine speakers doing that, or, you know, as opposed to, say, do something, you know, on the Masons or on the Vatican, you know, what all your other speakers right now are good, or maybe I'll do that in the future, but, you know, could you please believe in this thesis? He saw what I was talking about. He goes, absolutely. You know, so again, it was an individual like that giving me the time and the space to bring this incredible teaching to people. And, you know, that has got so many...
Hello?
He and I have received a lot of compliments about that particular talk, on the subversive use of symbolism, you know. So again, in every area, it's been other people's belief and other people's support that has really done it.
Yeah, well, that is very, very important. The symbolism is that I often wonder that how symbols themselves, whether we believe it or not. See, there's a difference between, if I believe that I can have luck by holding this item, I can actually create that luck, if you will, myself. The thing is really a crystal ball, just a a thing to focus my creative power on. But on the other hand, I've often wondered that if actual items and symbols really did carry some kind of power or message outside of what we read into it.
Yeah, they do. And the people in Madison Avenue and behind the advertising conglomerates, they know that. They know that we have millennia, like you say, millennia old symbiotic, you know, spiritual symbolic connection to certain symbols, to certain rhythms even, to certain musical notes, to colors. They know that. So in order to control our minds now, they draw upon that. See, we're kind of modernized and we forgot that. We've forgotten our symbiotic connection to ancient symbols. We just think a triangle is a triangle, you know, and a circle is a circle. And, you know, we forget that the ancient world was filled with symbols like the Sphinx and the Pyramid. And these things were worshipped and they have tremendous antiquity. Now, in order to control us, this stuff that used to be for our spiritual uplift, you know, James, has been, as you know, taken by the modern conglomerates and used to dumb us down, to sell us some blinking soap or to sell us some toothpaste, you see, or some other erotic that has been eroticized and by these pornographic-minded people in Madison Avenue to keep us down in our lower centers of intelligence, to completely enslave us to the material world. So I'm saying, okay, be part of the material world, and by all means, wear those T-shirts and wear those logos and wear those symbols. Can we just ask you to do one thing? Know what they mean. So my work is to say, okay, wear that Fila T-shirt or, you know, wear that Adidas T-shirt or whatever, but these are ancient symbols. And they're ancient names, and 70% of the products that we have, even in our fridge or in our kitchen, or certainly in the grocery stores, do not have names that mean anything in English. Now, you'd think that a manufacturer or a manufacturer of that product would want to sell his, you know, product as quickly as possible. So why is it that most of the cars, then, and so many of the products that we buy, don't even have names in English? Lexus, Acura, you see, Mazda. But these words actually do mean something. Coke, Pepsi, the list goes on. These words mean something in the ancient sacred languages of the ancient world, either in Hebrew or in Latin or Greek or Persian or some of the magical languages, even Celtic. And my work focuses on explaining what those words mean so that at least you know what's going on.
All right, well, we're going to take a break here. Maybe we can just pick one out just for the heck of it. I mean, not picking on any one particular one, but something just to give you an example of how that works out. And also, as you go along, you're bringing up points and I'm trying to write them all down to come back to them. But
right on.
But I appreciate your passion in it too. I mean, you're real. I could feel it. I could feel the energy. So that, I mean, that's cool. So hold on. We'll be right back and continue. Michael Tissarian is going to be here. He's talking, and boy, we're going to be talking. We'll open the phones up next hour. Give him a chance to lay a bunch of stuff down. Then I'd like you to call in and have your questions. And we're going to learn. We're going to get down to some of the facts here on mysteries, theology, Atlantis, etc. This would be great. I appreciate these type of things. Answers a lot of my questions and yours too. We'll be right back live. Beat the Fire.
You are listening to Feet to the Fire.
Você está escutando ao Feet to the Fire.
Bienvenue. Vous écoutez Feet to the Fire.
You are listening to Feet to the Fire.
With Black Knight.
We're back on live. Michael Tissarian, his website is taroscopes.com. If you're by a computer and want to check it out, I tell you. You'll go there and you won't listen to the show anymore. So you can go after the show maybe. We're back with Michael. Welcome, Michael.
James, yes. People can also go. I have a lot of different websites, so if they just go on to michaeltissarian.com,
okay,
they'll be able to use that page to get around the different sites, because there's I got about 5 different websites. So if people, you know, find that difficult, then just go on to michaeltissarian.com, like my name, and that will help you to navigate through the different sites. But you're right, Taroscopes is the main website.
Okay, well, I will put that one down when I put the archive up, so to make sure that people understand that.
Yeah. Then it's easy. Then they can navigate here and there, because, you know, I have a series of DVDs that you mentioned. They have their own website, Origins and Oracles, but people find it, you know, too much to write down. So if they just go down to michaeltissarian.com, it'll be all cool. They'll be able to see all the different sites that we have there.
All righty. Now, before we move on, can you give us an example of one of these ancient signs or symbols that are being manipulated to sell something to us?
Yeah, I can. There's, you know, thousands of them. I have a DVD in that series, which is called Subversive Use of Sacred Symbolism in the Media, and that's what that goes into. The second half of that goes into almost all the corporate logos that, you know, are prominent in our data space and also in our world space to show exactly what the occult history of these things are. Because, you know, just even before I give you a specific example, just let everybody realize that when they're driving down the boulevard, you know, there's certain colors that are being used. They need to really understand how prevalent the sun is, the symbol of the sun, the symbol of the pyramid, and the symbol of the star. These are the three most commonly used images, and they're everywhere if people have had the eyes to see, because seeing is actually an art. You know, seeing everybody can do, but observing very few people can do. So you have to observe what's happening around you. And the pyramidical shape, the pyramid from Egypt, the symbol of the sun, the symbol of the five-pointed star, you see. But there's other ones as well, and I go into the whole A to Z of them on that DVD. But specifically, let me just give you know the product Bacardi?
Yeah, actually, I think I might even have a bottle in the other room. Right.
Well, people notice that, you know, there's a hideous vampire bat has been used as that corporation for many years, and people have, you know, asked, why on earth, you know, is this hideous blood-dripping vampire bat being used, you know, as the symbol of this corporation? And that takes us into who Bacardi is. That takes us into the old times of the pirates and how during the British colonization of the world, when they sent these buccaneers and privateers and pirates, these were the vanguard. The image put in front of us on television, you see, of the swashbuckling pirates is actually false. These were individuals who worked for the British establishment. Their pirate chiefs were extremely educated people in maritime universities who took to the high seas through maritime law to be able to go to these colonies and rape and murder and kill and pollute, you see, and desecrate. And then when they had set up their colonies for the British government, for the Russell Trust and for the Hudson Bay Company and the East India Company, once they staked their claims after they had slaughtered everybody, the first generation of these pirates were often given, of course, the lay of the land. They were given the riches, they were given the houses, and of course these people often peddled in what? Alcohol, you see, and tobacco and opium. I mean, the history of all royal families, you couldn't have one unless you also had the history of opium. So the white slavery, all the pernicious things that they get up to. So some of these original families, like the Bronfmans and like the Bacardi and so many others, are these original Illuminati henchmen. These are the lieutenants. And to let you know that, they still use a lot of pirate-type symbols in their iconography and in their high-priced ads. And the Bacardi, you know, is a company like that, who are definitely part of the Luciferian network of people who are, you know, and of course, what does alcohol do? I mean, alcohol is a suppressant. It's one of the other things that is out there suppressing people's consciousness. So that is a particular logo that people need to be very aware of. It has a reason why somebody would be using a satanic type of logo like that. But even in more familiar, Nike. People know the Nike check or the Nike tick. Mm-hmm. That is actually the corner and the black. Nike has always been famous for its color black. And that is drawing on the symbolism of the planet Saturn. And in fact, the little tick mark that is, you know, famous for Nike is actually a ring of Saturn. It's a corner of a ring. You have to imagine that there's a black planet there, and that that check mark is sort of like the corner with a light on it of the ring of Saturn. People can go onto my website and see this or get the DVD. It'll be more explained. So why would a company like that be actually consciously drawing on, or let's say their marketing people have told them to draw upon, the symbolism of the planet Saturn and the sign of Capricorn? Again, McDonald's. People have seen that logo, the big GAM, you know, what they call the golden arches. I don't know for how long, and people recognize that the colors are bright yellow on red. What they're probably not aware of is that is a very, very ancient and very famous astrological sign. Anybody who's listening to me now, listening to our show, who's a sign of Aries, knows actually now they can connect the dots, because the sign of Aries is a large M-shaped like horns of the ram, which is the sign of Aries. And that's what you're actually seeing when you're looking at a McDonald's. Now, the trick is this. You're not consciously aware of that. This is the trick. What you see is just what you've been told to see. But your ancestral mind, your unconscious mind, is very, very aware that you're looking at the sign for the first sign of the zodiac, which has been worshipped for thousands and thousands of years as a cardinal fire sign, the sign in which the sun in the spring, you see, rises up into the heavens to bring us new life and a new vigor and to bring in the spring cycle. So we have thousands of years of rapport subconsciously in our DNA connected to the sign of Aries and the worship of the spring and the new sun conquering the darkness and rising heroically like Samson and like the Christ, rising into the spring, you know, the newborn sun. which then crosses the bull's head in Taurus, which is why Spanish men jump over the heads of the bulls. You've seen those weird festivals that they do down there, and even they're not even aware of why they're doing it. Well, the idea of the young virile man jumping over the head of the bull is the old astrological idea that the young virile sun rises up through Aries and then over the head of the bull, and then we know he's going to reach the summer. So, you see, all these kinds of motifs are known to the people in Madison Avenue, and, you know, I go on at length about this in the videos. For instance, Merrill Lynch. Merrill Lynch uses the symbol of the bull. Now, it looks normal, and we accept it because we've seen it. But how many people actually observe it and say, well, wait a minute, out of the countless thousands and thousands and thousands of symbols that this business financial conglomerate of America should use, tell me why they're using the bull? Well, it's not them using the bull. They're ignorant. They're just a businessman like anybody else who wants his business to do well. You can't. Don't translate what I'm talking about, you know, when I talk about the subliminal use of symbolism, and blame the merchant. The merchant is just a guy who has a hotel or a motel, you know, and wants to sell his, wants to make money, and he wants his symbolism to reflect that, but he's not savvy to the occult nature. Who I am implicating is the Madison Avenue agents who are thoroughly versed in this, who get the contract and then devise the symbol or the logo, and then they hand that. And it is these Madison Avenue companies who have their ties to the European royal houses and to the Illuminati and to the Masons, and they're using this Masonic Luciferian symbolism in order to make a point. In terms of Merrill Lynch, it's a very simple example. That is the sign of Taurus the bull. And anybody who's even spent 5 minutes looking at even a coffee table book on astrology knows that Taurus, the sign of the bull, is the earth sign. And that is why companies who deal in money and financial investment, you see, and very earthy kinds of things, use earthy kinds of symbolism. They're using a language of symbolism that the average person is not aware of. And we need to know about it because it has power, and it has power over your mind.
I've noticed another sign that popped up locally here. I'm trying to remember how many years ago, but Meritech was the phone company here. And the first time I saw it, all their new the advertising board, had a ring like going around a planet, but there was no planet, and it had a little star on there. So either like a comet or whatever. And then they filled in their Ameritech sign. But now I've seen that. I see it all over the place.
It's all over the place.
It's different angles, but it's a ring with a little star or what have you at the end of it, traveling around it.
And same for Nortel Corporation, same for, you know, Prodigy, same for Intel, the logo for Intel. I mean, you know, I go into all of these on the DVD that I've done, and it's been a fascinating subject. And what I learned, I learned slowly like everyone, and that is certain colors are preferred, certain symbols are preferred. They don't always use the same kind of symbol, and they also don't use the same kind of astrology that we maybe are familiar with, which is why a lot of astrologers haven't caught on to this, because these people are too smart. They don't use the normal Western horoscopic 12 sign, you know, Western symbols of astrology. They use those symbols, but they use a whole other ancient stellar form of symbolism. Because as a matter of fact, now that we're on the subject, there are not just 12 constellations up there. There are 88. For convenience sake, modern astrologers started to use only 12 signs of these 88 signs. And of course, people wonder how the Chinese zodiac, for instance, fits in. Well, that's because there's more signs up there, and their animals, their little creatures that they represent are a throwback to the old 88, you know, signs of the zodiac. They have a little bit a different take on it. Some are similar to ours, and others are not so similar, you see. But for instance, when they're talking about the dragon in Chinese astrology, that's Draco. That's a huge constellation up there that is no longer used in Western astrology. And then you'll start seeing the symbol of the dragon or the lizard or the crocodile turning up in commercials, you see. So for instance, you have the symbol of the tiger, which the company Esso used to use in England, which is your Exxon Corporation over here. You know, so there's 88 constellations that you don't know about. And you don't know about the symbols for those. So even if they were to come on the television or be used in ad copy, you wouldn't probably know that it's astrological. So that's when people like me talk, they go, you're talking nonsense. Maybe they do it once or twice, but, you know, it's not a big deal. Well, that's because you haven't studied the subject and don't know that there's just so many astrological ancient mantic symbols there, magical symbols, being used not for the uplift of your soul, not for the protection of your spirit or the sanctity of your mind, but to drag you down again, you know, to a lower, confused, debauched, and perverted level, which is why our society and our children are so beset by this, and nobody can put a finger on it. Now, I taught children this subject for 2 years in California. I was a teacher of communications, and I specialized in letting them not turn the television off, but to turn it back on, only this time to look, observe at what's coming over the television, to tell them that there's nothing wrong with television itself. It's who's using it and what for. And when you become savvy to how light is being used as a weapon against you on the television, how some of these corporate logos, you see, what they really mean, how the male, the father figure, is always shown as some sort of dork, you know, on commercials, right? The perennial, the incompetence factor. There's all sorts of messages being sent to you by way of the television that you need to become savvy about. And turning it off is not going to help at all. Because if turning it off is really turning off your mind, being blind, saying, I don't want to be seeing it. That's not the answer. The answer is not to be a cynic of your society, but to be a critic of it. To be able to see what is wrong so that you have a true and utter defense against some of this psychic poison that is, you know, flooding into our midst.
You know, hearing you talk made me realize that in the last, say, oh, since about 97 is when I kind of woke up, maybe 96.
96, well, look at that. 96, I think, was a very important harmonic convergence. It changed a lot of people's lives. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I had intuitively knew things. So, like, I would sit down and watch the new generation, start the new generation with my kids, and I would start pointing out the symbolism that they put in there and the messages they're trying to give. And of course, they kind of thought I was nutty. But then I don't know. I just knew it, you know. And I learned to kind of listen to my inside. It was giving me clues on this stuff. And it's good to hear you say this stuff. If anything else, it's you know, more validation for the flow that's coming outside of me.
Well, it's the same for me. How do you think I got started? It was exactly the same thing. I don't know what actually prompted it originally. I think I had studied a lot of, you know, because I come from a metaphysical background. So I had always been studying the occult and metaphysics. But it never dawned on me in the wide world to connect it with what's going on in, say, the advertising business. I mean, the two normally do not go together. But I think it was through an American gentleman by the name of Brian Wilson Key, who wrote the famous paperback book, you know, Subliminal Seduction. This is a paperback that was world famous. And it's an American man who is the first human being to really bring up the subliminal aspect, that they're putting stuff in there that you can't physically see with your senses unless you're very perceptive. Before him, there was an American gentleman called Vance Packard who wrote the book The Hidden Persuaders, and he was the man who really blew the top off of the Madison Avenue conglomerates and backed up what I'm saying. He's the first man to show that it was conscious. It's not just some mistake. It's not just some merchant, you know, shooting the breeze and trying like we would do to come up with a logo creatively, sitting there with our family and draw pictures. And no. This is a very high level, highly financed type of subject matter, you see. And so it's American. It's Gene Kilbourne. There's the specialist in advertising recently now, because Vance Packard wrote in the 50s and early 60s. Brian Wilson Key picked up, I think, in the 70s. On this, and then Gene Kilbourne and Douglas Rushkoff are the people in the 70s and 80s, 80s and 90s, excuse me, who have been, you know, continuing to try and make people aware. But the thing is, the reason it makes my work different from all of these authors who've done some incredible work is that they do not delve into the occult side of it. They still are of the opinion that it's just rich conglomerates, you know, trying to do all of this. And that doesn't wash with me at all. Because the symbolism that they're using is incredibly ancient. It's very, very much part of the ancient cults and ancient sects and ancient magical fraternities of old. It's also very Masonic. And there is no way in a million years that the people would have this level of sophistication if they were just hiring guys from art college, you know, to come up with fancy logos. It's just no way. That does not cut it at all. So my work is very much based on these authors that I've spoken of, but is, you know, I believe much more poignant and much more controversial, because it deals with the occult side of this, because there's no occult agenda. It's not just to sell products to people. You know, Lexus, Acura, like I said, these companies. How come so many cars are named after stars and planetary things, you know? Mercury, Lumina, Astra, right? The list goes on. Again, on the DVD I go into this, but there's so much of this. Now, also, by the way, I have a free web stream. If they go to taroscopes.com and go to the web stream page, there is a free two-hour web stream, James, on the subversive use of sacred symbolism. So if people need an appetizer, want to know more about this, they can have a free web stream. Just go to taroscopes.com and you can watch that.
All right. Well, hold on. We'll take a break and we'll come back and continue. All right. Well, we're learning a whole lot there. I'm actually getting a lot of personal validation here. I hope you guys are, too. We're on the right track. May not have the reason, but I'm starting to figure it out, and that's cool. I got a bunch of questions. We'll open the phones at the top of the hour after This Week in Free Energy. So we will continue Feet to Fire live.
Hi, this is James Arthur Janczyk, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth via the path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality, all without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. The lack of contradiction is the final judge here on Feet to the Fire.
Feet.
Sunday evenings.
To fire.
How do you listen?
Fire.
www.feettofire.com for more information.
Contact James live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose direct chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@innersights.com. That's f2f@innersites.com. There is a video chat room to see James in action as well as other F2F listeners. www.ivisit.com has the free software to download and access the Feet to Fire video chat room. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Janczyk.
Well, that's what we're here for, is to find out exactly what to do. We're going to change the world one person at a time. And, I think there's a gelling coming out, and people like our guest, Michael Tesarian, is put together on his website, michaeltesarian.com, which leads you to other things. A lot of tools to expose what has been done to us, and kind of a lot of the real truth behind things. And I want to welcome you back, Michael.
Thank you, James.
I noticed a good portion of your stuff is about Tarot. And when I started fooling around with Tarot in astrology and stuff, I learned a little bit about each one. And it seemed to be like a little tool belt, so I have I can converse on it, but I'm not an expert by no means. But one of the things that fascinated me was four cards jumped out at me. And they, I was like, just, I didn't know nothing about the cards at all, but four cards became like, quote, my cards. And then later on, I learned a little about them. And I don't know, maybe if you want to, I don't know if that comment, if you, maybe if you can just give me a comment on some of these cards.
I don't like to really comment on people's personal readings and give them analysis like that, because I think that the readings, what I've done is I've provided, you know, the meanings of the cards on my website.
Okay.
So people, when they pull the cards, they can go there and look at some meanings, but as to do a, you know, a specific reading without me being originally involved in the original reading, no, I can't comment on that. If you've done a reading for yourself, then you're the only one who can...
Okay, well, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Do you think that these symbols obviously mean something, but where do they come from? How do are they a gift? Are they benign? Is it depends on how you use them? I mean, what...
Yeah. Depends on how you use them. It's just like anything, you know? A person can use a fork to stab somebody in the head, so you don't blame the fork. It's definitely a situation in which these are part of... Remember we were talking about the ancient myths and legends? Well, those are bequeathments from the ancient times, but the ancients also left us a lot of other things. They left us their monuments, these great temple observatories, you see, and all of that, and they left other kinds of monuments, like the tarot cards. Tarot cards, astrology, there's nothing sinister in them at all. In fact, if people have read through my astrotheology pages, they will have discovered how Christians, early Christians, used these things, and that the church still do, as a matter of fact. So there's nothing negative in them at all. One of the reasons why there's a prohibition, especially the Christians, to not use these things is because, again, it's part of the disinformation and it's part of the suppression. They don't want us to be able to have that picture on the lid of the box that I was talking about earlier. And these divination arts provide us with that. They help to clear the lens, so to speak, of seeing, of sight. And that's not what the power brokers of the world want for us. So they use these subjects like numerology, you see, and astrology and tarot to empower themselves. Well, we are, of course, told that it's, you know, devilish to get into all of this stuff, which is total utter nonsense, because all the ancient church fathers and many, many other people within the Christian movement have definitely empowered themselves by way of these devices. They're no more satanic than putting, you know, a birthday cake. If you're going to say that the tarot is ritualistic and astrology is of the devil, then you might as well say the ritual of creating a birthday cake and putting pagan candles on it, you know, at a birthday a celebration for somebody is equally pagan, because that celebration actually does come from the pagans. So, you know, you might as well say that, you know, wearing a certain color or having a fountain in the center of a town square is pagan, you know, or having a clock tower. These are all pagan, you know, so it's nonsense. We've been slowly divorced from our own power, and we've been kept sort of enslaved by this kind of time, the 12 hours of the clock that is the, you know, man's sort of slavery right now. These divination arts help you to release yourself from that kind of slavery. So there's nothing wrong with them at all.
I learned, first off, when I was, I came out of a pretty, like, a conservative Christian background. I was teaching in Sunday school and all that. And by actually learning what the words were, the Greek and Hebrew words and what they meant, it opened up a whole thing to me. And for example, I found out, just like what you said, when I looked at the term wise men, the three wise men.
Yeah.
That same Greek word was used in the word sorcerer later on, and it showed me that this Gnostic knowledge is not bad. It's just how you use it.
Right, absolutely. And again, you know, it was so prevalent in the past. People were so benefited by using a lot of this. Of course, a lot of stuff can be abused, but that's with everything. Isn't Christianity abused? Aren't the priests capable of being pedophiles? So, you know, we're talking about abuses on all levels here. And you're right. These things have an ancestry. It's all about how you use them, you know. And there was a campaign, because they were so common in the past, and people did do their own little readings, and they did look to these things so that they could organize their lives and know what's right to do and what's not to do. It's just an extension of the knowledge that people had from working on the land, from noticing the movement of animals, you see, and the weather patterns, and divination arises out of a perfectly natural symbolic literacy, a symbolic observation of life. There's nothing negative about it at all. Now, certain individuals in the world, from very high up and also more common in the streets, use these techniques to take away the power of others still. There's no doubt about it that certain very negative people go towards these things so that they can suck the energy and, you know, and confuse people. Instead of using them for good, they use them for bad. But as I said, that's been done even in official channels. Politicians and priests do that, you know, as well. So there's nothing specific to the cards. In fact, the cards are tremendous, you know, and there's a I got a free web stream tour on my Tarascope site. If people go there and want to learn more about it, there's a free tour. They just click on it, and it's a visual, a web stream, multi-length part where they can have a total introduction, you see, to the cards and what they're really all about. There's a lot of resources, a lot of free resources on the Tarascope's website that people need, at least just you know, become familiar with, so that when they're talking about these subjects, they're talking intelligently, and there's no fear involved, no fear, no danger, or anything like that. We need to really understand how ancient these things are, how beneficial they were, and even for people into art and other forms of expression, they can use the tarot, they can use these wonderful cards and these images to empower themselves.
Okay, I have a question coming in from Jim, who's listening in Holland. He chose the chat method. Our phone lines are open, 888-863-2722. That's toll-free United States in Canada, and actually I get calls from around the world, so just give it a shot. In this chat piece here, he asked something about, he heard you mention there was a buried ship in Iraq. Can he elaborate?
No, that's not me. Buried ships in Iraq has nothing to do with what I've been talking about.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Another one on symbolism. Are there any symbols that you know that can free us or enlighten us rather than suppress us? I guess a key, so to speak, that can unlock us.
That's a really good question, actually. And yes, there are. I think that one has to have a personal relationship with inanimate objects in the beginning. I'll answer more specifically in a minute, but I think that what really needs to be understood is that all symbols that are out there and all things that are out there, even physical, tangible things, we need a relationship with them. We have 90% of our relationships is with human beings, because we have been falsely brought up to believe that human beings, because they reflect back to us all the different cues and expectations that we need, you know, sensually and emotionally, that therefore we acknowledge only the human being as being alive. Well, as a matter of fact, there's a lot of human beings walking around there who are not alive and that we shouldn't be in relationship with. Second to that, there is a whole other world, a natural world, of things that we have been taught falsely is inanimate. It's a ridiculous word, inanimate. The ancient people knew that nothing is inanimate. Symbols are not inanimate. The pyramid is not inanimate. Trees are not inanimate. You know, the clouds, the sky. So there's a whole world out there that we are not in relationship with. And by cutting ourselves off from those relationships because we think it's just dead matter, we are consigning ourselves to only have productive relationships or unproductive ones with human beings. This accounts for one of the reasons why so many people are depressed and so many people are down and so many people feel really cut off and isolated and alienated and completely out of sorts. Well, of course, if you are going to confine your set of relationships solely with some very, very toxic human beings who really don't mean you well at all and are very problematic, then no doubt after about 18 or so years, or even sooner if you look at some of the teenagers nowadays, you're going to be in a state of great impoverishment, because human beings are not so bloody special as they think. They don't have a lot of the answers, and some of them are very, very toxic. What I try to get across to people is that, yes, have your relationships with human beings because we share a lot in common, but don't exclusively do that. Create relationships with other things, with guitars, with buildings, with architecture, you see, with all sorts of things that you consider inanimate that you just think is there to help you function, that you just think these are there as, you know, for you to control, like animals. How many people have really true relationships with animals? Well, we know a lot of people have animals, but those animals are treated as slaves. It's a slave-master relationship. You're not learning from the animal. So there's all sorts of relationships out there that we need to get in with. What's been a person's relationship recently with the sea? They'd think you were mad if you even said that. Well, that's your problem. So the artist, the person who's really in the world, is not just hyper-focused on, you know, the approval rating that he's getting from other people and how good he looks in other people's eyes. Because if you're going to base your life on human relationships, you will be very depressed and very alienated and very isolated and very jaded very soon.
Well, you spoke a load there. I've had in this last year in particular, I've had a lot of unpleasant things happen with humans. On the other hand, I kind of like that. I have certain objects and things that I just kind of fond of, and I don't have a reason for it. I just am.
Right. So you have a relationship with these things, and this is what other people need to realize is cut back a little bit. You know, have your positive relationships, and we're not saying curtail it. We're just saying realize that there's other relationships out there that you're not even remotely aware of. You know, and it becomes like a Zen type of thing. You know, realize that everything has a life. Everything around you has a life, and become aware of that life. Look at how many times the light alone changes during the day. From the morning to get up to the time you go to bed, just the light in your room has changed hundreds of times. Have you noticed it? You know, no, people don't. So unless, of course, it's functional, you know, and so forth and so on. Now, when it comes to specific symbols, the original question you asked, this is, you carry that on by getting involved with certain power symbols that you have a specific relationship with. Symbols are definitely not inanimate. They are living things. The way that you get in touch with the symbols that will help you become more empowered is by getting into the symbols of your race. It's no good people from the East worshipping the symbols of the West and the West from the East and so on, because there are these conscious, there's divisions in consciousness. Carl Jung also spoke about this, that, you know, certain gods, certain deities, certain symbols, shapes, forms are not going to register to the Western consciousness as, say, they would to an Eastern consciousness, where those symbols have a completely different, set of projections. So, but it doesn't matter. In your tribe, in your culture, in your race, in your ethnic background, and I don't mean get into it because then you can oppose everybody else who's not of your background. That's trash. I'm talking about the Gnostic heart, the Gnostic essence of who your people were. If you get back to those symbols, they will definitely empower you. You know, you see this in certain countries. So everyone needs to go back to certain, in part of this journey, you need to maybe visit the ancestral symbolism of your own race, your own tribe. Now, that's not the end of it, because that's not making still you have a personal relationship with a symbol, okay? But it might be a way to go, because there are certain cultural and symbols of a race, of a culture, of a tribe that are very important to get back to on this journey. But that's not still the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is for you to get into a personal relationship, just like you said, with your own power symbols, and maybe even to come up with them yourself, and to devise them yourself, and to take them from everywhere. But you see, a lot of people find that very difficult in the beginning, because, you know, you're not really dealing with the subject of symbolism. The subject of symbolism can take you into words, it can take you into letters, to names, it can take you into all sorts of areas in which you have to become empowered. It's not just in one small thing, you see. Oh, I wear a cross, so I'm a Christian. Well, listen, ancient Christians didn't even wear the cross, you know? And so, you know, we need to really explore the whole question of symbols, and slowly move through our culture to find out what symbols were sacred to our culture, and move on from there, and then find, okay, which symbols really, you know, empower me specifically. So that's everybody's independent journey. And I think also what another very, very valuable part of this is to know how symbols are being abused and used against you. This is where my work comes in specifically, because I can't instruct people like some know-it-all teacher about what, you know, they should be doing symbolically. But what I can do is say, this is how not to do it. Let me describe to you and show you to you how symbols are being abused, so that you know that, listen, this is the wrong way to do it. This is the disempowered way to do it. So then you have a clearer picture of what is the empowered way to do it.
Oh, that's excellent. I have we had a caller come in on the 1-800 line.
Okay.
And all they said to Lucinda, who was answering the phone, was, "Beware," and then they hung up. That was the caller.
Well, they had time to come on the telephone, so they might as well have said a few more words. Then we would have known what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah. Do you find yourself? I mean, I know from my fundamentalist background. I mean, I know that you got to be looked at as you know, evil or bad guy or someone from a lot of people on this planet. I mean, not only from...
Only by a very few people who are completely undereducated and disturbed in themselves. Because my words are words of truth.
Uh-oh.
And anyone who's got truth inside them and who has an instinct for truth, they're never worried. I have thousands and thousands of Christian supporters throughout the world. I have great respect. I've been on Dr. Stan Monteith's radio show, who's, you know, a reverend, who's a very, very staunch Christian. I've read the works of Gardner, who wrote the book on Holy Alliance, and Tex Mars, or great friends, Jim Mars, you see, and Ralph Epperson, and Eustace Mullins. These are all my mentors. They come out of the Christian world. James Bull Greitz. I don't think there's a greater man in this country than James Bull Greitz. And he is very much a Christian gentleman. You see, but as James Bull Greitz says, as the Colonel says, let's not wave our religion in somebody else's face who's a truth seeker. Just let's not say, because this person is not a Christian, and maybe points out some of the dirtier sides of our religion, that this person then is evil. Because you're going to be accountable for that kind of statement. Just because this person is coming from a different persuasion, and maybe because this person is pointing out some things we need to also point out, does not mean that this person is negative. After all, long before Christianity existed, these Illuminati dark alien powers existed in our world. So let's be under no misunderstanding that long before Christians came on to fight the good fight, because Christians are fighting the good fight, they know about the fight, they know that there's evil principalities working in this world. But let's understand one thing. And maybe it will take you down a notch or two into humility. But long before Christianity ever came on this planet, it was the people within the white brotherhood of the occult side who were fighting the dark forces that have been ruling on this planet. So Christians are a later addition to the game, into the fight. It's an important contingent. We're very glad to have those, you know, educated Christians on board to fight this game. But it did not originate. You see, this fight, as people have read my book, originates 50,000 years ago and has been going on hotly up until 11,000 years ago. Well, look, Christianity is 2,000 years old. What was going on, let's ask, you know, the average Christian to really sincerely think about this. Did evil suddenly get created at the birth of Jesus Christ or the coming of Abraham into Egypt? Absolutely not. Evil has been in this world for 50,000 years. Well, then who was fighting it before? It has been people in different churches, different cults, different persuasions, very genuine and brilliant people, Gnostics, Pythagoreans, Native American Indians, all sorts of individuals. This is a massive army of which the Christian group is one contingent, one valiant and needed, you see, mounted police or army contingent that has come to face the battle. But they are not the sole fighters of evil in this world. And in fact, evil has, you know, proliferated within Christianity, because Christians still need to do a lot of homework to find out about the evil in their own midst, the origins of their own religion, and how their own religion has been subverted, and how many lies and fakery has been, you know, taught to Christians. And I'm glad to see that many authors, like the ones I mentioned, particularly Eustace Mullins and Ralph Epperson and James Gardner and others, and Tex Mars, you see, these individuals are addressing this problem and trying to get Christians back to a truly moral standpoint. Because it's no good if you're virtueless and moralless in your own life, you're not going to be able to fight world evil. Forget it. So the individuals who have a problem with my message, who are so distorted and prejudiced, you see, and limited, and have no understanding, yeah, they calling themselves Christians, it means absolutely nothing. Those individuals may be infected by the same kind of evil we're trying to fight. So this is the problem. This is the area. Christians have a lot of homework to do to find out the origins of their own religion. And gladly, I'm glad to see that that, in fact, is starting to happen in this country. And it couldn't be better. Absolutely couldn't be better. And anyone who is threatened or challenged by my words, you know, well, then you need to be threatened and challenged and offended. You know, like he who needs to be offended, he who is offended probably needs to be offended. Because people like me are not in the business of offending others. We're in the business of truth and light and revelation. Because the war of the earth is sinking. America is dying right now. This country is being murdered by its ancient enemies. So, big, you know, we are trying to pull the country back out of the sewer that some of the darkest forces on this earth are trying to put it into. And therefore, you're going to get dirty doing that job. So if somebody comes and leans on the fence and goes, hey, man, you're really dirty. Look at the mess you're in. Well, do you think I'm going to stop and listen to those idiots? Yeah, I'm doing a job of work here. You know, I come from Belfast. I didn't come, you know, 6,000 miles to waste time. We are being shot at openly here by some very dark, pernicious forces who are going to have, the end date of 2012 is approaching. And there's going to be massive changes in just the next 7 years. So we need to get into the occult to find out what kind of occult weapons are being used upon us.
Now, on that subject of 2012, we're getting close. So what can we, my question actually has 2 points. Like, evil's been here for so long. When is it going to get its butt kicked off this planet? And is that what we're going into? And are we looking to 2012 to be either a beginning of a golden age or like the end of civilization?
It's a great question. Absolutely the most important questions that anyone could be asking right now. The questions you've just asked have a lot to do with the origins of evil. As you say, the evil has been around a long time, and that's what I specialize in, is the origins of evil. How did this sadism, this cruelty, this injustice, you see, come into the world and also into the consciousness of human beings? And now that we know it's there, when is it going to end? What are we going to do about it? We can't continue bequeathing this question of evil to our children. And then the Maya are talking about the end date, this mysterious end date that they didn't really elaborate upon, except to say that, of course, there is a countdown phase. This is one thing that it did emphasize. And that countdown phase began about 1999. It would be a 13-year countdown. They did talk about that. And they did talk about the fact that after 2012, something very major would be changing. And I think what they were talking about is not the earth or the world itself changing, but the way that we've been living will be radically, radically changed.
Oh, well, that's good. No, but hold on. I want to just keep going on. We'll be able to take a little break here, and we'll come back and continue right where we left off. Looking forward to 2012, changing the world the way it does. I mean, if I could wish for it, I mean, I want to get into a peaceful harmony thing. I don't need no more toys or bigger toys or faster toys. You know, the toys are killing us. Anyway, Michael Tesarian is here. It is michaeltesarian.com. I have updated the website, also terrascopes.com. Phone lines are open if you'd like to ask a question and not give us words like beware. Because there is no fear here. There is just truth. And with truth, there is no fear. We'll be back live after these breaks. Feet to the fire.
Hi, this is James Athayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. And when you think of voiceovers, you normally think of commercials, right? Well, let me ask you something. Does your company voicemail sound like this?
Hello. Welcome to TechCom High Speed Circuit Design. Press 1 for sales.
Now, do you want that to be the high-tech first impression to a caller? Now, how about this?
Hello, you've reached TechCom, an innovator in high-speed circuit design. How may we route your call?
While Inventive Voice does create, script, record, and produce fine, top-notch, broadcast-quality commercials, think out of the box. Let us impress your clients with creatively conceived and professionally produced audio for any occasion. In-house commercials for retail stores, for example. How about fast-paced promotional audio played in elevators, restrooms, and other short-term but often visited areas? Visit our website at www.inventivevoice.com. Drop us an email or give us a call at 888-863-2722 and let us create memorability for you.
Hi, this is Jeff from the band Silvercord, and you're listening to Feet to the Fire. Check out Silvercord at www.silvercord.com.
We're back with Michael Tesarian, and just welcome back, Michael, and what's coming, where we come from, evil, and where we're going.
The idea is that the Maya date is what is perplexing a lot of people now, and a lot of people are getting into this, and rightly so, because it's very, very important. But they were a little bit vague, so the best way to look at it is, in Western astrology, is also sort of a confirmation. A lot of the people into the occult side of astrology know that we're coming to the end of what's known as the Age of Pisces. And I think this is basically what the Maya calendar was also sort of suggesting. So as opposed to being, you know, a specific year, it was more like it was a statement that represented what happens when a cycle closes. The zodiac is a cycle, and the last sign of the zodiac is Pisces. So when the sun is coming to the last part of the sign of Pisces, then we're closing one entire circle of 12. So we are now living in that time. And so, yes, it is right to speculate that there could be an ending of the way that we've been living now. If that ending brings about the ending of the kind of tyrannies that we've known in this world, then I'm actually personally all for it, because, you know, things obviously cannot go on the way that they have been going. And I think that my work focuses on not so much speculations about what the other world is going to be, as opposed to what the brotherhood, the dark brotherhood, who also know this truth and who know that times are coming to the end, what might be their, you see, raison d'etre, what might they be doing now that they know that the cycle is coming to a close? They might be worrying about it more than us, because if there is some kind of return of the light, or if there is some kind of phase shift, or some kind of astrological, you know, phase shift, then don't you see that the power brokers of the world might also be very worried about that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so I'm trying to track that. I'm trying to say, well, then, okay, wouldn't it be then very predictable that they'd be starting wars again in order to keep a climate of chaos and mayhem and murder and injustice? Because that's what these people are made out of. So, of course, they always want to live in and have the ambiance that suits who they are inside. The evil of these people, you couldn't even begin to even, you know, fathom. And the darkness, the perfidiousness, the immorality of these individuals and anyone who is of this alien persuasion is very, very significant. And so, therefore, you know, like vultures, they have to have a boneyard of the world. Now, other good people don't want that. Good people obviously don't want to live in a life like that, but there are some people who absolutely thrive off of it. So we're going to see, you see, just before the ending, there will be wars, there will be chaos, there will be fear, there will be dread, there will be toxicity, there will be more perversion. And this is by design, so that the dark forces on this planet can offset the coming of the light, the good energy that makes them feel very uncomfortable. You know, some people call it light, other people call it photonic energy. There's lots of different ways that it can be spoken of. It's just basically a phase shift. It's nothing more complicated than the fact that a single year comes to an end. A single year has a cycle. We know the winter cycle. And then it ends the year, and a year ends. A year ends at Christmas in the sign of Sagittarius. There's nothing more than that. There's nothing more bizarre, except that the cycle is longer. The ancient Indians talked about the yugas. The Mayas talked about their 2012. And in Western astrology, we're talking about the ending of the age of Pisces and the moving into the famous age of Aquarius. But at that point, everyone's screaming and yelling about, yeah, the age of Aquarius. It's like, well, wait a minute, that's tomorrow. What about today? forget about what the age of Aquarius is going to be like. Wonder about what the end of the age of Pisces that you're in is going to be like. So in the New Age movement, again, there's been a lot of disinformation. There's been too much idealism about the coming of the age of Aquarius and all this pontificating. And nobody's worrying about, wait a minute, in order to get to that field, in order to get to that place, you have to first close correctly, you know, the age that you're in. And nobody's focusing on that. There's hardly been a word written about the dynamics of the age of Pisces and the kind of stuff that's going on this planet while everybody, you know, pipe dreams about the age of Aquarius. This is, again, you know, where things get sort of back to front, and then people get jaded and wonder what the hell is going on. You know, we are in a situation now where we have had ancient evil operating on this planet, and we have become infected by it. Man is cruel and unjust. He is deeply immoral inside his own being, and he's deeply psychically toxic. So he has to then remedy this inner problem himself. The conflicts of the outer world are projections of his own inner dynamic. And in this next couple of years, we are going to be able to get a chance to do that, if people want it. I mean, if they don't want it, they want to stay with the old status quo, that's perfectly fine. Now you asked more specifically about the time in between. We spoke earlier, you and I, about the end of this year. Around about Sagittarius, there's going to be a very important conjunction taking place. Sagittarius is, of course, in November into December. So of 2006, an incredibly important astrological conjunction takes place. Not some bogus stuff like other people have been talking about down through the years, Y2K and all this other malarkey, but a very, very significant one. The planet Pluto, which has many things that it rules, and if people go onto my web stream, the web stream called The Origins of Evil, it's on taroscopes.com, they will be able to hear the whole story, you know, more than we have time to go into here. There's also an article on my website called Shiva, the Holy Spirit and the Age of Aquarius. They need to read that, which talks about this. But the planet Pluto, in short, rules all that is hidden. So just like the Book of Revelation was talking about all that is hidden behind the apocalypse, the word apocalypse in Latin just simply meant a leather cover, okay, a leather wrap or a leather lid. Well, the leather cover is nothing but the human body, or shall we say psychologically the human mask, the human persona, the mask behind which everybody hides who they really are. So the apocalypse has nothing to do with, you know, angels fighting in the skies and all of this stuff. It has to do with an inner conflict, an inner battle of Armageddon between the forces of light and darkness within a human being. We are now entered into that time of apocalypse. The Maya referred to it as the age of revealing. And anybody with half a brain cell can already see that these things are happening in the world today, that there is a dropping down of the mask. And then there's the attempt of people to put that mask back up quickly because, of course, they don't want to be exposed. So both protagonist and antagonist in the next 7 years, and starting from about December of this year, are going to have to become very, very aware of what is happening so that even if you happen to be a protagonist, meaning that you are not a disseminator of dark energy, you're still going to have to know what's going on, because if you start seeing the mask and other people that you know and even you think you love starting to come down, you're going to be shocked more than they are. So therefore, you might then do irrational and crazy things. So my message to people is realize that we're entering an age of revealing, an age of apocalypse in which the masks of the false are going to be coming down. And that doesn't mean just up on Capitol Hill, you see, or in the White House, or in St. James's Square in England, you know, or in the Vatican or wherever. It means in your own home, in your own streets. The mask is going to be coming down on people right in your midst, right on in the way of even celebrities that we've been seeing on television and so on. This is going to happen on the most intimate level. Now, you may not be a disseminator or a generator of dark energy, but if you're so good and holy, but you don't know about these changes, then you will be shocked, and your shock might make you do irrational things. So I'm here to tell you to be aware that this is going to happen, and do not intercede or intervene, and for goodness sake, do not try to prop up those who are about to fall, which is another one of these stupid, you know, ethics that unfortunately Christians have bought, where if you see somebody, you know, who's rotten to the core, ready to get their justice, or are ready to walk up the steps of the gallows or to the guillotine, you run in and start to petition for them to save their souls. Now, we don't want any of this. We're in the time of ancient evil, and now the justice field is coming. The judgment is coming. So step aside and be very glad that this kind of energy is coming in, because there are many crimes to be taken care of and many enormous violations on this planet for millennia to be taken account for. So don't get in the way and stop the light from coming in. This is a big warning that I'm making sure that everyone understands. There's nothing holy or sacred about, you know, saving these individuals. You know, I always go back to that image on Star Trek V, Captain Kirk, you know, where he's fighting with a Klingon who killed his son. Remember the beautiful movie where they're fighting on the precipice and there's a big volcano, all the lava?
Yeah.
He's fighting with the Klingon. And then as the Klingon goes over the edge of the cliff, Captain Kirk, out of his humanity, still grabs the guy and is willing to save his life and pull him up again, because basically he's won the fight. But what does the Klingon do? The Klingon's face is full of hate and envy and murder, and is trying to pull Kirk over the edge of the cliff as this guy is going down. And then this fantastic moment comes where Kirk just cannot believe what is happening, and then says to this Klingon, "I am sick of you," and kicks him right down into the lava where he belongs. And that is the spirit that we need. We need to be that kind of Aryan with positive anger. There's a positive kind of anger that needs to be in the hearts of people right now, the flame, the blue flame of anger, to realize that our forefathers died in the fields and in the factories under these tyrants, these kings, these merciless people. People have read my stuff and, you know about this. The terrible, terrible calamities that have been done for thousands of millennia. There is a time of change coming in now, and it begins in earnest. November, December of this year is the highlight, because we're already past the halfway point of the Maya 13-year countdown. We're already past the halfway date. So it's already begun. But it is like accelerated. It's put into a whole other turbo drive, you know, coming around about the time of November. So anyone who's listening to this needs to realize this and be prepared. And be prepared for changes and to want those changes. Not to try to prevent them, not to try and sugarcoat them, but to allow it and realize what kind of angelic force is working behind this kind of energy of revelation. So that is the most important time. There will be other minor conjunctions and other things of importance, but they're much more less important. This movement of Pluto, people need to read up on Pluto, or they need to go to that article I've written on it and see the Origins of Evil web stream to get up on this idea. It's just a jargon. Pluto is just a jargon for an astrological phenomenon. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the energy represented by the planet Pluto. So we're not, I just use astrological jargon because that's my background. But what we're talking about here is the roach cleaner. We're talking about the spin-dry cycle for the Earth coming in now. And the roach cleaner is basically pulling his van around the corner and is on his way. And the roaches are running. So for God's sake, let them run. Don't stop them and go, "Oh, please, 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 you're very holy, stay here." Don't be, you know, raising any placards, "Save the roaches," which is often what the good side, you know, tends to do out of ignorance. No, there's a whole different energy coming right now. And this planet Pluto is the revealer. It takes off the mask. And my message is also, yes, if you are a immoral, virtueless, corrupt, perverted person who has walked on other people to get where you are, and that you have no humanity in you, and you think that all your life you can just repress all the crimes that you have done, then beware. Because, you know, we're putting a finger on you. The finger is now coming. Your time is limited. Your time is short. And it doesn't matter what kind of mask you've been hiding behind or what kind of toys and games you've been playing with, because you will be found out. We are now coming to the age of Pisces, and the message board is up. It's in neon lights now. That there's going to be a sea change. The Maya predicted it many millennia ago. And this change has also science involved with it. It's not some bogus New Age thing. Scientists understand that there's a photonic action, that there is a spring clean cycle for all planets and all orbs. And what happens, to finish off, James, is that the planet Pluto is sort of a harbinger, you know, of the change that's going to happen in 2012. Because this year, Pluto comes in front of Galactic Center, as I said, in November. So the planet Pluto, like a lens, like a huge lens, comes in front of Galactic Center. This is the center of the galaxy, a very important point for ancient people. It's like the altar, you know, the sun behind the sun. So Pluto passes like a lens in front of a camera or like a filter in front of a light. It's going to pass in front of Galactic Center. Now, what happens in 2012? The sun does the same thing. The big deal about 2012 is that the sun, on the morning of December 21st, 2012, on the morning of that day, the sun will be conjunct with Galactic Center and radiating a powerful, you know, form of light energy, which will then signal whatever's going to happen at that time. But before that event, several years before, here we are in 2006 coming into 2007, there's going to be other guardians, other kinds of, gatekeepers announcing the fact of what is going on. And all of this is seeded in people's consciousness. So people who are immoral and verminous and, degenerate, continue doing what you're doing. Carry on. Nobody's asking you to change. Keep on doing what you're doing, because you're in the final hours now. All I'm trying to, my message is simply to this. My message is to all the good people. Step aside. Get out of the way. Don't worry about any of this stuff if you start to see it. Understand where it is coming from. Get savvy. Be aware. And also when this, some toxicity arises within yourself, also be aware of that and don't get panicky. We all have levels of toxicity just to live in the cities and just to live in this world. So there might be a lot of emotional upheaval within your own life. There may be a lot of upheavals in your relationships, in your intimate, you know, domestic settings. That's all right. You must see it as good and do not try to continue the status quo. This is very important. I know it's hard to do, but it's going to be very important. It's going to be a lesson that's going to be taught to everyone very soon. Is to let go and find out what your priorities are so that you're aligned with what is true. So even if there's certain upheavals within yourself, be okay with that and try to, you know, let it happen. Because there's a greater greater purpose to all of this. All that is happening is that some filthy, rotten edifice is finally starting to crumble and break down. And there's nothing in the world wrong with that.
Well, I didn't jump in here because, boy, not only did I need to have that little talk, because I tend to get too compassionate at times, but I've had a lot of people freak out in my life in the last, year or so.
Precisely.
And
I mean, back in the last year or so, yeah. You know why this is? It's because Pluto is very slow moving, James. It moves about 250 years to go around the whole sign of the zodiac. So when it's moving towards an important location like this, it's not just in the 5 minutes that it crosses that location. We start to feel the ramifications about 2 or 3 years, depending on the movement of the planet. Like the age of Aquarius. The age of Aquarius is not coming in for about 150 years. But see, astrologically, that's only a blink of the eye. So we are starting to feel the consequences earlier. That's why you're saying that within the last year or so, you've seen these changes already. Because yes, in celestial time, even a couple of years can be just like, you know, a few minutes. We're coming up to the age. These are the borderline areas. And it's very important. Now, see, it's right to have compassion. But have compassion for yourself and for the millions of your forefathers and the good people of Earth who've been buried by these leviathans. Have compassion for them. I do so many talks and radio shows and listen to all these people bleeding on about the, you know, be compassionate to the reptilians and put your arms around the Illuminati and love them to death. And I just cannot believe what I'm hearing. How dare these people say things like that?
Be compassionate
for the people they've buried. Be compassionate for your own forefathers who suffered and got mutilated in mines and farms and factories and who wondered all the days of their life what on earth this big mystery was all about and why they lived like this, who died in filthy wars just so that some king, you know, could maintain his status quo. And this has been happening recently. You don't even have to look into the ancient past. This is going on right now. Have compassion for the human soul that has been so violated for over 50,000 years. And dig deep the grave for these other people who are going to be toppling into it. That's my philosophy. Maybe it's Irish, I don't know. But America 200 years ago seemed to share this kind of philosophy when American people kicked the greatest tyrant in the world back into the Atlantic Ocean where he belonged, King George III, and all his mercenaries. He had paid mercenaries from all of Europe. And it was between 3% and 6% of this nation who rose up. It wasn't 90%, it wasn't 100%. No, the rest of everyone was doing what they're doing now, shivering in fear. But it was 3% to 6% of the people who just realized the price of freedom. And it would always be that kind of scenario. It will always be like that. But you see, those few percent of people, as long as they have the right motive and that they are centered and sovereign within their own psyche, because there's no good trying to become legally sovereign unless you are sovereign morally within first. If Christianity teaches you to do that, by all means. If Buddhism teaches you to do that, by all means. If atheism teaches you to do that, then by all means. I am not concerned about the methodology. I'm only concerned is whether a man is wise or is a fool. And whether his attitude towards the phenomena of good or evil are correct. Because good and evil you can't change. So anybody who's running around, you know, trying to say, I'm fixing evil, I'm solving it, that's not going to happen. That's lunacy. Good and evil are phenomena outside our control. They are like absolutes in the world. But what you do have control over is your attitude towards those realities. And your attitude is what is you responsible for. So if your attitude says, well, you know, I'm going to follow the path of evil, and I will not care about other people, and I will just rape the earth, and I will not do my sovereign duty, then that's your attitude. Your attitude is, you know, is wrong, and you will be held accountable for that. You know, we as a human species have a lot of crimes to basically own up for. And that is kind of the period that is coming now. The Mayan calendar explains this. It's just a simple astrological phenomenon. There are cycles of everything in exactly the same way as a year has a cycle. It's exactly the same thing up the fractal a little bit, up the spiral.
I'm going to try and sneak a call in here. You're on a roll. I didn't want to stop because I'm thinking this is so good for us to hear that not only is time coming, but we have to make sure we're not enabling evil to hang on longer than it has to.
Right, because it's been programming us. It's been subliminally programming us with a. It's like a mosquito. When a mosquito sucks your blood, it doesn't just suck your blood. It inserts some of its own saliva first. And if that happens long enough, you see, we have the elements of the vampire or the mosquito in our blood. So the evil has been infusing us slowly, dumbing us down. It's like the worm tongue that Tolkien talks about. We've been worm tongued to death, so that kings have forgotten their role, and that whole peoples are led astray, drunken and sodden and lost and wayward, because we've been worm-tongued, and the time has come now to realize that that has happened, and to shake off our chains and to realize what the truth is and to get back to it. And that truth is ancestrally within us. It's deeper within our core. This is what is important.
Well, and speaking of Tolkien, God, I bought the book on tape. I've listened to the entire book.
Right, and wasn't he a Christian? Wasn't he a Christian? Wasn't C.S. Lewis? You know, these are mentors of mine, right? You cannot get higher up the totem pole, either academically or morally, than these individuals. And what was their point? Their point was two things. Identify the worm tongue. Stop dreaming about light and heaven and paradises and ages of Aquarius. Forget that. Discover what the darkness is in your midst. Discover where the worm tongue is. Get rid of it. And already the other thing will be born. You don't have to will it into existence. And the second thing that he mentioned is that the smallest of people can do the greatest of things. But that smallest individual, the most insignificant of somebody, has the greatest power. But he must go into darkness first. And this is important. He must first go into a place of darkness, meaning the underworld. This is the underworld cycle, which is what we're going through now and what other people in their lives will go through and misunderstand because they think there's something evil or satanic about it. No, there is going to be truth restored, but the journey of truth also has an underworld cycle that the Greek mythologies talked about, that Joseph Campbell was always speaking about. And we have been living in the super-lit, super-medicated world, you see, in which we don't want to look at the dark side of ourselves. We've been conditioned out of that. We dream too much about the light and don't want to look at the shadow that the light casts. And therefore, we become very psychologically impoverished. We try to live in this one-season world. And that is also what is part of the problem. People need to be okay with their deeper emotions and with anger, you see, and even with hate, and understand what these things are and not get, you know, confused by it. People must learn to love anger. They talk about love. Okay, then I have a challenge for you. Love anger. And if you can't do that, then don't talk to me about love. It's easy to love a beautiful thing. Well, see, this is the whole trip. This is the confusion that we've been worm-tongued into not understanding. There are genuine forms of anger and genuine forms of hate. When you understand what I'm talking about, that these things can be defenses of your sovereignty. These things are guardians of your sovereignty. They arise when you maybe are being attacked, for instance. What happens if anger and seeing these certain, what we consider dark emotions, or we've been trained to think are dark emotions? What happens if those things are defense mechanisms, just in the same way that the body has lymphocytes and white blood cells and white blood corpuscles? We accept it with the body that we have carnivores within our body that prevent us from getting physically sick. But how come we don't understand that psychologically? And because we have not understood that psychologically, the state, the republic, is crawling with vermin. And so then don't tell me that out of a dead corpse, out of an incredibly rotten edifice, that you're not going to find then maggots and parasites proliferating. That's perfectly natural. It doesn't bother me that you have tyrants on Capitol Hill and that they're all over the world. You have merciless, tyrannical, you know, parasitical, vampiristic people. Well, I expect that to happen. If you have let your sovereignty go down and you've let your body politic turn into a corpse morally and spiritually, well, of course you're going to have these kinds of things happen. I'm not worried about the parasites. I'm worried about how come the soul of man is dead. The ego has arisen like a ghost from a tomb. You know, if you see a ghost or a specter arising from a grave, well, that's what the ego of man is, because man has not gone to his soul. Man is soulless. He's murdered his own soul in many intricate ways that I talk about in the DVDs. And because man has morally killed himself, many men have done this, many of the people in the world are doing this right now, from that grave of the soul, we have the ego, which everybody is, of course, worshipping. But don't tell me that there's something that abnormal about the ego, or about the parasites and vermin, you see, that arise from the rotten corpse of the self. That's perfectly to be understood that those will be there. There's nothing wrong with them. That's natural. And by trying to kill them all off, you're not going to do anything good. You have to restore the health. You have to restore the health through the true Holy Grail, through the real understanding of what it is that brings vitality and life back to the Republic.
And
we've been taught many wrong ways of doing that. First of all, is psychic cleansing. There's a reason why the word sanitize and the word sanity are connected. And let me repeat that. There is a reason why the word sanity is related to the word sanitize, because you cannot be sane unless you are sanitized, meaning hygienic, morally. If you are unhygienic morally, then you are unsane or insane, as many people now are. You can see it in their eyes. You only have to look around you, take a walk down any street in the world. The insanity is almost oozing from people's face, the kind of corruption. It's right there for anyone who's got eyes to see it. And if you don't have eyes to see it now, just wait a couple of years. You're going to be seeing it loud and clear. Now, this comes about, how does that come about? It comes about because people have murdered their own soul, because we've also been trained to do that. We've been trained to conform. We've been trained to mimic our parents, you see, and our teachers and our peers, people who are deeply psychologically arrested and immature. We've been brought up by them, and in order to conform to the world that they created, we've had to go along to get along. We've had to emulate and mimic those people. But that doesn't mean, you see, that we need to continue that process. There are other teachers, and there are other teachings, and there are other ways. There's ways that teach you that you are your own priest and your own priestess, and that you can initiate yourself into that, and that you don't need intermediaries, and that if you see something wrong in the world, you can do something about it. You can create your own website. You can do what James is doing and get, you know, form your own radio station. You can pick up a pen. You can pick up a microphone. You see, you can do something about it, especially now with the internet, where so many more crimes are being exposed than they ever were in the past, and there's more information available. So realizing that people are a power of one is very, very, very important. And there's a whole other, you know, look at, I mean, obviously it's individual cases need to be treated individually, but the general rule is that we need to understand that it's because people are unclean in their psyche. They've repressed a lot of stuff, and it's built up and built up and built up in the past, and that this needs to be dealt with. And America, in one way, is a little backward that way. It hasn't really taken positively to, you know, what the great psychoanalysts were talking about. And that's why we're finding the situation that we're in. Now, I explain this more clearly and distinctly in the DVDs more. It's a big subject. It's a little bit difficult to get into in a quick way. But don't forget, also, we're being assisted in this. There is also a higher self that is, you know, trying to make sure that the very, very the irredeemable toxic people, they're going to be taken care of very soon. And their masks are already starting to come down. And there's nothing wrong with that at all in my eyes. It might be a bit of an emotional, you know, harangue for some people who are morbidly attached to these individuals. Because, of course, vampires make us morbidly attached to them. So, you know, yes, that detachment can seem very, you know, morbid. What I mean is difficult in the beginning. But ultimately, you have to really understand what is going on. It's a process. There's a lot of information on this on the website. And people need to get savvy with this, because we're not just talking about some arbitrary movement on the clock, you know, the moving of the hands on the clock when we're talking about 2012. We're not just talking about some shadow on the time dial and you just sit back and don't have to worry about anything. It's just something that's going to happen on the clock one day. No, this is a change in consciousness. Time and consciousness are deeply connected. And so these changes, these phase shifts, have a lot to do with the nature of consciousness. But rather than talking about all this, glowing stuff that everyone's pontificating about, I am much more in the homeopathic field thinking and concerned about what is the release, what are the symptoms that will happen when this toxic material starts to come up in individuals and also in societies. We're already starting to see it do. What are the possible reactions, you see, that will happen? You have to know about those. It's just like a doctor expecting some sort of plague to hit. You have to kind of presume that there will be healing, yes. But in the meantime, what are some of the symptoms that we're likely to see in certain people who cannot stand the rising of this light? And what would also happen if we represent that light in the people of that we're surrounded by? Not even consciously, maybe we're not even aware of it. But what would happen if we were representatives or channels of that kind of spiritual light in the families and in the ambiance and at work and the places where, what would be the, you know, some of the reactions we might start getting? Might we not be sabotaged by these people who feel deeply threatened by the kind of energy that we bring in? And might we not also need to account for that and be aware of that, you see?
No.
A lot of questions.
Absolutely wonderful, and we're completely out of time. And I apologize to the caller who was waiting. I couldn't stop. You were perfectly on a roll there. And Michael, I'll have to ask if you can come back and continue this, because this is something that we absolutely need to hear. Right to the heart, right from the heart to the heart, and I really appreciate taking your time here.
Anytime, James, and thanks again for the opportunity to do so. So thanks, brother. Keep up the good work.
I will, and I tell you, you gave me a good shot in the arm, and I needed it. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so we'll talk again.
before, the one who walk again, the ancient one of old, with wisdom for the new. Revive our inner sight, retell your timeless truths. Oh,